You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
Welcome and thank you for joining us today on TWC's Peace Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Annie Mae Lee, and I'll be joining by Sharon Chakushin, and today we're going to be talking about surrounding children with love and support and what that might mean. So TWC's mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk Radio Show is our opportunity to let the region know what work is being done around the region and answer questions if people have them. This is a call-in show. If you have any questions, please feel free to call for any questions or thoughts. And the numbers to call are 907-543-5985 or 1-800-995-8954. Again, if you have any questions about TWC's work or work that's being done around the region, please feel free to call 907-543-5985 or 1-800-995-8954. So for our announcements today, the thrift store will not be accepting donations at the moment due to an overcrowding of clothing. So though we always utilize and appreciate the generosity of our community members, and we will rely on that in the future, we're holding off on accepting donations until the thrift store has less things. There are positions open at TWC. If you're interested in becoming a part of our staff family, please go to www.tundrapeace.org and see what positions are available. If you or someone you know wants to learn more about TWC and the services we provide, please call any of our call-in numbers. Our 24-hour crisis line is 907-543-3456. The toll-free number is 1-800-478-7799. And the Bethel local business line is 907-543-3444. Again, TWC's crisis line is 907-543-3456. The toll-free is 1-800-478-7799. And the Bethel business line is 907-543-3444. So today I'll be talking and with our guest, Sharon Chakushin from the 4-H program. Would you like a second just to say hi?
Hi, good morning. Good morning. This is Sharon Chakushin, and I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you. I'm going to start by saying that all statements or opinions shared on Peace Talk are coming from a place of education and collaboration. I forgot to say this before, but we do not come from a place of judgment or the idea that we know what is best for each community in the region, each community, and really each person is unique and has different needs. So we're coming from a place of collaboration and education, and I just like to say that before we actually start these shows. So we're going to talk a little bit about our personal histories of working with children, and I'm going to start and say that I really haven't had much. But I, as a TWC worker and as someone who grew up in Bethel and around the community, will say that I have, as a child and as a teen, utilized a lot of the programming out there for teens, children who've experienced trauma. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my personal history, which is that I actually started in Bethel as a child in a shelter. And through being in the shelter and really creating relationships with the children's program, that really started my passion for preventing violence and really educating about violence through the community. So it started from being able to identify emotions and talk about our day and really working on communication and conflict resolution skills there. And then that turned into really having a good relationship as a teen with the teen program at TWC, which there is where I really started actively searching and educating myself on ways to prevent violence. So a lot of times I like to say that my journey to violence prevention started actually in a children's program. And that's kind of just a little brief history about why I really I really enjoy talking about really surrounding kids with support and really emphasizing the importance of it. So, Sharon, do you want to go next?
Seeing there's no one else here.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, too. We hadn't, in prepping for the program, we hadn't talked about our personal lives at all, but my personal life started so long ago. but one of the things, you know, I was getting my degree in social work, and one time I was looking around the room at a teen program of addicts, alcoholics and addicts, and I thought, all these kids don't read and write at grade level. What a challenge, you know, what an additional challenge that is. And maybe there's something more basic. Maybe, you know, maybe teaching kids life skills in any area helps kids in every area, maybe. And one kind deed, you know, who knows. It can't hurt, might help, can't hurt. I'll have to try it. So being kind to others, finding ways to do that, that's kind of been maybe my life mantra. That's where I started from. And, it's so rewarding. And children are amazing people, and they grow up to be adults. And if you impact them now, that's pretty exciting. It's easy to impact little people than it is to impact adults. So that's my experience. That's what I enjoy doing.
Really eases the way for, like, education and, like, I don't know, I guess resilience in the future, really.
Yes. Building kids up.
So you're here today because you are a part of a program, and it's a program that TWC has worked very closely with a lot, and so we were able to kind of, like, have this really, really nice relationship partnering with you as a partnering agency. You were with the 4-H program, and could you take a few minutes to kind of talk about what you're doing there?
Yeah, I would love to. 4-H is our program now, and usually people, you know, still do say, oh, the teen center? So we are located in the teen center. How many years ago, when the city of Bethel and the university decided to part ways, what it used to be Parks and Rec and the 4-H program, when we separated, then the university took over, and we have that 4-H program happening at the after-school program. It is a really good community program. When we made that split, so I was a part of UAF Cooperative Extension at that time, and 4-H is a part of Cooperative Extension, and that's when I came into the program. We talked with a lot of agencies in town and parents to see what's the most needed right now. And what we came up with was the after-school program is vital. We can't cut that. Need the after-school program for that third grade through sixth grade. And that's where we began. We were able to add kindergartners after that. And the teen program, we've just finally been able to build that up over the last couple of years. 4-H is a national program that's positive youth development. It's based on a model usually that has adults, caring adults, volunteering with a skill and passing that on to younger people. It's not quite the model we have here, but it's part of it. We like to use that skill-based, I really like skill-based learning because It builds in resilience. Kids are learning something new, which means it's not going to be easy. They're learning something new, which means they're going to get better at it. Maybe they're going to have failed attempts, but they're doing so in a community with others, with their peers, and with those the supportive, loving adults, and they're building those lifelong friendships. So that's part of it. And then the other part that we're doing has to do with having young leaders and the opportunity for either junior leaders or teen leaders to give back to the program, to give back to someone who's younger than them, you know, and learning maybe how to do public speaking or how to look out for others, how to pass on their skills to others, and building that supportive, caring environment. I don't know how much you'd like me to tell now or if that's a good enough place to start.
That's a great place to start. Is there anything else you wanted to say about it?
I'm pretty sure it'll come up as we go on.
Oh, I'm definitely sure it'll come up as we go on. So thank you for giving kind of just like a bit of the work you're doing. And as someone who is a partnering agency and has worked and spoken a lot to your staff and you as well, I will say that I really appreciate your work and I think it's wonderful work. And yeah, so as we're talking about children, I think it's really important as someone like me who doesn't necessarily always work with children, it's really good to have the expertise of someone who does and really has a lot of that personal experience with seeing firsthand, like, maybe the challenges and what's needed. So thank you. When we're talking about working with children and really surrounding them with support, we have to think about the possibilities of what they're facing outside of kind of our support and things like that. And really that comes in with talking a little bit about trauma. And I know that I talk about trauma on every time I'm on the radio, but I feel like it's just really important to be educated in this because it really affects our reactions, our lens, and a lot of times really their reactions to how we react. And children are very, and I like to say this a lot, are very, very, it's not intuitive, they're very attentive. They're very attentive and they're really soaking up a lot of information. So it's just really important to kind of know where they're coming from. So trauma itself is just a deep, distressing experience or a disturbing experience that happens. And trauma affects your brain, especially as a child, and we'll talk a little bit about ACEs a little bit, and it really affects your development. And we'll see this through things like maybe cognitive disabilities, or we might see people just having, like, not thriving the way that other children their age are. We might see this in even physical reactions kids have. Kids who are under a lot of stress and a lot of trauma often complain about things like aches and stuff, and that's because it's that it has that amount of effect on their bodies and really the psyche of children. So there are four types of trauma come to play a lot of times when we talk about this. And there's acute trauma, which is like a single incident. And when I really talk about acute trauma, I usually say something like, well, this could be like a plane crash or a natural disaster that happened. That would be an example of a single incident, an acute trauma that happened. And acute does not mean that it's like minimizes the effect of trauma. It just means that it's been there for a small amount of time. So I like to say it doesn't really talk about the effect because someone in a plane crash may get on as the next flight as soon as possible to get home, and another person might not go on a plane for years. So, again, this is different for everyone. There's chronic, which is long-term, and you can see this a lot of times with things like instances of domestic abuse. You can see this on instances of domestic abuse And you can see this on instances of people who are living in war zones, and we're going to talk a little bit about how that could be very similar, actually. And then we have historical trauma, and this is one that I feel that the community is very good at addressing, and that's trauma that happens to a large group, and this could be seen in things like the fact that colonization happened around this area, or it could be seen, for instance, like before the women's rights movement, where a lot of times the oppression was towards, and a lot of violence was towards women. So the one that I'm going to be talking about, and of course the other traumas definitely have a play in this, but when we're talking with children, we mostly hear about complex trauma, and that's trauma that happens and it's usually chronic, starting from a really early age, and it usually happens by a trusted caregiver or a parent or like a trusted adult, someone that the child loves, and this has a lot of lasting effects. So trauma can affect the everyday life of a child by we'll just talk about living in a war zone first. When we talk about living in a war zone and we kind of talk about adverse childhood experiences, we think of how, you know, when you are in a home with domestic violence or you are a victim of the primary victim of domestic violence as a child, you don't know the difference between safe and unsafe times because it's very come here, stay back, come here, stay back, in the sense that you don't know if this anger is safe for you, this anger is unsafe, if they're going to react in a certain way to really anything you're doing. And it creates this feeling of hypervigilance or really walking on eggshells, and that could be very, very damaging to a child's self-image and then a child's relationships to other people. One, just how they view themselves, how they view their own abilities, how they view themselves and think of themselves in relationship to their family or the people around them. And then the relationships with others, and what I see mostly with children is when you have your relationships with others, you base your actions and behaviors on the way that other people react to you. And we see this a lot when... I don't like to use these type of words, but I'm going to use them now in talking about it in this context. When you talk about, like, good children and bad children, trauma affects your brain. It affects how you respond to other people. And sometimes it could create someone who's really passive or someone who has a lot of aggressive behavior. So someone who really, really wants approval and wants positive attention, maybe they'll cling to safe adults. They'll do their best to do everything right and really not create any conflict at all. They're really trying their best to please the people around them. And then you have someone who might go the other end, who might really just try to get a reaction out of anybody. And that's also very, very common with children who are neglected, so this could be really acting out. And, you know, I don't, again, it's not language I usually like to use, but there's, like, acting bad and then there's sucking up. And those are kind of negative ways of seeing it, but both aren't necessarily, they're not a reflection of that they're just bad or good. It's not just they're choosing to have this, you know, with trauma, our brain, we have, well, in a lot of times I hear it called the reptile brain, and then we have our thinking brain. And sometimes really going off instinct creates these reactions, and that's fueled by trauma itself. So when we see a lot of this confusion, again, between safe and unsafe times, we have to really look at how they're reacting to us. And Sharon, we talked a little bit about this. Sure. I kind of asked you, have you seen a lot of that where they're doing that acting out to get attention? Or and I've seen this definitely a lot in my work, is just clinging to safe adults and such.
Sorry. Let me back up a little for this, like having a having social emotional learning, looking at that classroom of kids, and it's not just like, oh, these families experience crisis, you know, or the like long term, some of the explanations that you were giving, you know, let's just see how a kid might be developing in their life, right? And then they're going to veer in a direction or they learn to behave in certain directions. But backing up from that, every kid in the class, you never, in the class or whatever it is, the after-school program, whatever it is, you never know what kids have been going through. Because even if you know it's a stable home, for example, there's just little trauma that happens in kids' lives any given day. You don't know if they just had to move, you know, this weekend, if they just uprooted everything they know, right? And it could be because of domestic violence or other things that we consider crisis. It can be, you know, people getting married. It can be somebody broke their arm, you know, or they had a car accident, or anything happens, and it just shakes a kid's foundation. So when we come in and we start the day, or, you know, it's the after-school program, we're starting each day, you just never know where kids are coming from. And to have that secure environment in which we still are looking at them as a whole person, you know, that's where I think it needs to start. Because, you know, you just never know who was fighting in their house last night. You know, what was happening this morning? Did they have breakfast? Did they just fail a test? Did, you know, what, all these things that happen, you know, even if their best friend stopped talking to them. In a little person, these things just feel so huge. So it helps to have that compassionate view on them, that supportive, caring environment.
Can I just say thank you for actually bringing that up? I do tend to, because I work at a domestic violence and sexual assault shelter, I do tend to kind of go a lot onto that. But really, everyday traumas, I've been told that trauma could be a little bit like just taking a toy away from a child. So thank you for bringing that up. I do tend to mostly talk about really that end of things.
So that's where we're going to say taking the toy away is not necessarily trauma. But what happens is, on this day, I just carelessly take that from a person, or just disrupt their schedule, you know, or just disrupt something. It depends on where they're coming from sometimes. If a child melts down, it probably is because of the other things that are happening in their life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, maybe it just adds up. It's like having a bad day, but they're little. So I don't know if this is exactly the right time, but goodness, I had a student unconsolably crying one day. Unconsolably crying. And she was saying, you know, she missed her mom. Her mom had said, like, she can't come get her. She's not going to pick her up. That's what she said. She kept calling her mom at work, and finally the mom said, you know, I'm not going to come get you. And she was just crying. So in her, like, second grade interpretation, she thought her mom said she was not coming to get her. In her second grade interpretation, she was thinking, like, she's going to live in the 4-H building for the rest of her life. How's that going to be? It's so funny, but it's so sad, too. She was really thinking. And finally, you know, when she calmed down enough to kind of tell me that, and then she missed her mom, and I told her, you remember, your mom has a really important job, right? And your brother's probably going to come get you. And she said, do you think that's what she meant? And I said, yes. And, you know, and then she felt so much better, and she understood the situation. But for that, like, 15 minutes or something, she really, she just had interpreted it differently. Yeah, I know. It's just funny. It is how little kids view the world. It's just that it's a different place sometimes. Anyway, you were asking, I suppose, a specific question about, maybe how kids try boundaries or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So what we want adults to keep in mind is that all kids are, like, good. All kids are proceeding through life as they best see fit, mostly. You know, so it might look like they are trying boundaries, or an adult might want to get real exasperated. But I've seen times where one of the staff, you know, has to give correction to a child or teach them not to, you know, teach them to respect some boundaries. And they were surprised that the child responded so well to that. We tend to think, oh, you hate to get a kid in trouble, you know, or you don't want to come on them harsh. But if we do it in kindness, actually they do love that. They respond well to that. Kids, they're learning. They're ever, ever learning. They always want to see what makes the world work and how can this go better, assuming they have the energy. The trauma that we were talking about, it just cuts down on a person's energy. We all know how that is, and you don't have the energy maybe to make the right decisions all the time. I'm wondering, Annie, if there was a specific thing we were talking about that you wanted to come up, but otherwise.
I actually, just this idea, and I'm going to just kind of be pop quoting you a little bit. Really, I think that kind of, that they continually want to kind of see how things work and make things better really goes hand in hand with, and what we have here in front of us is just kind of a list of talking points, and it has consistency and continued belief in a child's growth. I feel like just having this need for figuring out the way things work and how to make things better, our reaction to really that part of their brain or that part of their life as children really relies on the fact that we are consistent and we have a continued belief in the growth and that they will get have better actions in the future, and really not coming at it with this feeling of, I guess, overwhelm. And I feel like that's something that I, as a person, kind of struggle with a lot of times. So that kind of struck me there a little bit. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense to you. But I've seen, and I'm going to go into kind of the school experience, I've seen instances where really it should have been where that consistency or continued belief in growth hasn't been really that present. And I could think of moments, say, when I was in school where I would be that kid in the back, or I would see kids in the back, and, you know, maybe they're sleeping, you know. They're sleeping because their parents were fighting last night and they couldn't go to bed. They're tired because, again, like something simple like breakfast, they didn't have anything, or they haven't. I've had one friend who really hadn't eaten in a couple of days come to school, and they just slept in the back. And what I've seen is that sometimes the teachers or people around them would just be like, oh, well, they do that a lot, and that would just be it. Not really showing this continued belief in a child's growth, or really in this case it's the teenager's growth, but just how important that is. Sorry.
Oh, yes, we were talking about that, how maybe there's a balance sometimes between the compassion the adults feel to know that that child is, you know, like just struggling to survive. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we see adults who, because of that compassion, let the expectations slide. And then you end up with a person who isn't getting
well, there's the example you gave, they're sleeping through class. You know, so then they don't get to achieve everything that they needed to achieve. So instead of having just like a compassion to know, oh, that the poor thing, she's not able to keep up. Instead, that's where we get, well, the school has like RTI now to really help kids achieve at the level that they can and have support to do it. When we were chatting about it, I was thinking of my professor, Paul Ontagook, and he had shared the story. And I've seen him share it on YouTube now, too. He shared it with us in class, how when he was a child, his mom had died, and his dad actually just became an alcoholic for a handful of years. So during that time, they were a little community of kids, you know, the little family of kids, having to either take care of everything on their own or not taking care of it. So he told the story of one of his teachers who really just had to take him after class. I think she might have made up a scenario, whatever it was, but she had to teach him how to do the laundry. She had to teach him how to take care of these things so he could meet their needs because no one else was going to meet them at that moment. I think that's empowering, too, because he could get those needs met. She didn't have to do it for him, and no one else was going to do it. You know how when you try to retell a story, it just doesn't come out quite as powerful as it was when you tried to tell it the first time. But I was really impressed with that a person can just help fill in the gap there and let that child make it through this season. This isn't his whole life, right? He'd end up becoming a professor. So we don't want to put limits on what kids can achieve. We just want to help them fill those gaps and get there.
Yeah, and one thing that really sticks out to me about this story with him is that, well, one thing is that something as simple as doing laundry and, like, household stuff is so impactful. But another is just that, I mean, I sometimes would have been like, oh, you know, I see where they're coming from. They're so tired. I'm going to do this. And if I didn't have the time to or anything, I might feel bad for teaching a skill like that when I don't think in this way from a place of, like, empowerment. So just hearing about how the ways that can be a very positive thing is really great. And really that's because it's like a norm to, sorry.
You were going to give us the Xavier example.
Oh, yeah. This one, I was just kind of talking a little bit, and again, sorry, we're looking at a document in front of us, is that really when you don't have these survival skills before, like the simple things isn't doing things yourself, you kind of sometimes learn, or you have like a lot of trauma or there's a lot of things going on, you learn different behaviors to a situation that, you know, other people might not see as normal or anything like that. And I had an example with my nephew, and my stepdad was telling us this, but I think that it's so funny that he got in trouble at school for striking another kid, and he didn't really know he was in trouble. He didn't really think about it that much until he asked him, and he said, well, what's going on? You know, you're usually very, very respectful. You're very respectful of the kids around you and everything, and he was just like, oh, I didn't hit her. I was just playing Power Rangers. And it's just because, you know, well, I know because my nephew is, like, they roughhouse at my house and everything, but it was, like, such an alarming thing for other people, and he didn't really even see that this is just kind of something something he's used to, and it became just like a part of the way he plays. And it's kind of the same for these behaviors that happen when you're living in a war zone, or really when you just have a lot of stress, like, and you talked about how little things can really stress out a child, it can create these ways of really behaving and which, sorry, doesn't always make sense to us adults who know the applicability of these type of behaviors. So,
It's
that way of thinking, and a lot of times we'll see this as a lot of lying happening, and that's sometimes to avoid more conflict. It's to avoid more stress coming onto them, and just more stress in the environment around them. I said earlier that kids are very, very perceptive was the word I was trying to think of to those type of things. Maybe it's stealing because of a lack of and this is kind of coming from my lens as works with domestic violence, maybe like a lack of care at home. And these are really survival skills. And, of course, it's avoidance and it's taking from someone else. But they're survival skills nonetheless that sometimes people think about as, like, acting out. And really the way we as adults respond to that is very, very important. We talked a little bit about how and again, this is kind of like another point of avoidance where you talk about questions not permissible in court when you're talking to children.
Yeah, so what you were describing is they, even though you say they're perceptive, but really they just need to get their needs met. So they might not be, it's not like they're pausing for a moment to decide, should I steal this from her, or would that be wrong? It's rather they're just acting upon their, you know, to get their needs met. So that we want to almost take the moral judgment out of it for a moment. And the lying is what they sometimes they call denial, right? Don't even know I'm lying. Just because they have a innate view of the world. When you were talking about that and asking the nephew, you know, did you hit her? And he's thinking, no, I didn't hit her. They said, you hit her. You know, what's going on here? How come I've stuck myself in a interaction with a child in which you almost, like, you feel like you can't win because you ask them, you know, did you steal this? And they're thinking, no. It's an automatic reaction sometimes. Don't even know you're lying. It's automatic. Or I've said to kids, okay, did you guys get in trouble at home before? You know, like, let's just take an example. And I've had, like, a little table of kids, so I'll say, no. What? I mean, did you ever do something wrong? No. And it's not that they're lying per se, it's that they know, oh, that's not how we are, that's not what we do. So they say no. Then I say, did you ever get in timeout at home? And then they're like, oh yeah, okay, the thing that you did, that's what I'm talking about, getting in trouble, for example. That's where I had that term, questions that are not permissible in a court of law. Instead of just asking, did you do something, then they might just come back with a, no, I didn't. And then where do you go? I know you did. You're saying you didn't. She said you did. And it's like this. So instead, I just skip over that.
Actually, I like the part where you said that, because in this article, that how Inuit parents teach kids to control their anger, this was published, I think, in 2019, they actually talk about, how, you know, in the moment of anger, or in a moment of high emotion, that it's not usually, like, it's not always the best time to talk to them, and what they'll do is they'll, like, play act out a situation very similar to what they did, and give them options on how to react and say, like, well, are you going to hit them at this point? And that the playing was their work. And the reenacting in a playful manner the way that things went allowed them to kind of resolve a lot and really talk and communicate about things that happen or what I would consider, and this is kind of what I like acting out, but instead of coming at it from a place of condemning, it was really just them playing and kind of explaining the situation with young children.
Right, and sometimes with that article, they maybe would practice it again. You know, is this where you would hit them? And it said, yeah, sometimes they'd be like, yeah. And then as you continue to practice through it, then they realize, oh, no, I'm not going to hit them. You know, okay, now I got it. Now I see. Now I'm not going to hit them. With the other, if you don't mind me backtracking just a minute, but so when I said to a student before, instead of saying, when I was a school teacher, say, did you cheat on this test? And then I think that person would just say, no. And then you'd be stuck. So instead, I just go over and say, show me which questions you cheated on. Then, to me, it's like it lifts the burden. I don't have to make the child lift the burden to say, yes, I did the wrong thing. But rather, we're coming at it on a, not really peer-to-peer, but without condemnation, just to say, you know, which ones did you cheat on? Or to say to a kid, you know, show me your pockets, empty out your pockets, instead of asking, you know, did you take something? Just skipping over sometimes. I mean, I know when a kid can make restitution or go back afterwards and say, I'm sorry. But in the meantime, just to use the questions that are not permissible in the court of law, just ask them, you know, skipping right to it, or where did you hide her toy? Instead of asking, did you take it? And then they could deny it, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, owning up to things you've done is hard for adults to do, so I can imagine for a kid.
Yeah, I mean, so we might as well get to the root of the issue first, and then you can come back and say, you know, I know you were just playing Power Ranger, but that hurt her. Oh, did that hurt her, really? You know, and then they can go back and respond to that kind of thing.
I think that's really funny, because I see it so often where people are like, oh, that happened, say sorry, you know, first thing. That you really think of, and sometimes I've seen it just, oh, well, we don't have that enough time. I think that's a conversation we can have together.
There's so much we could talk about.
Yeah. So the next kind of thing we're going to be talking about, and I'm going to make this actually even shorter than I thought because we're eating up time. Just talking points. It's really important that we realize this, because children are our future, and really protecting them and teaching them these teaches them to protect themselves and others rather than continuing stress, or really just not knowing how to communicate, because that's really, really important. And as you said before, like, basic life skills can change someone's experience, should I say? And actually, I'm just going to kind of go over this one because we have a lot of talking points to get through. So when you talk about kind of these experiences, I want to talk a little bit about this activity we had with a woman that came in named Lakota. And I'm sorry, I don't remember her last name, but she is a wonderful, wonderful person. And she talks about kind of these amazing qualities that children have and asks us to, like, kind of shout them out or talk about them. And we basically came up with a couple things that were really, really important. Compassion for others, and one thing that came up is children's cry for each other as well as themselves. They have a big curiosity for life, and really us allowing them to experience and ask questions can strengthen their communication skills and really just strengthen their relationships to people around them. That kids should have a belief in themselves, and they do have a belief in themselves. And I remember when I was young, I thought everything I did was the most amazing thing, and it was because I believed it. And I wanted to show everybody what I could do. I wanted to show them my art. I wanted to show them my singing, how fast I could run, look at these shoes. I wanted to show them everything, basically, and say, look how good I am, you know. The acceptance from and people around them, just the idea that no matter where my mom was, the stress, or where everything happened, well, any type of stress that was happening at home or anything, or where my family members were. My family members could have been things like alcoholics or people who have been to jail or anything like that recently, and I was proud to say, like, look, this is my uncle. Isn't he great? And we all have these qualities as children, and it's really just the experience that shapes how we kind of how we present them when we're older. And she kind of reminds us that we all have these amazing factors within us. And really, my big thing that I take from that activity is that, you know, I am a person with a lot of I have a high ACE score. I experienced a lot of trauma as a child, and, you know, that kind of gave me these reactions to people that I didn't necessarily show a lot of these amazing qualities I had as a child. And the thing that did was my resilience score. So I'm just going to just do a quick run through of what ACEs are. ACEs are adverse childhood experiences. They affect things like even your health later. And, really your mental health as an adult, and they can trace these, they did a study a while ago where they basically kind of went back with people who were, had health issues, maybe had addictions, and asked them to these 10 questions, which is, did a parent or adult in your household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or act in a way that made you afraid? Another one was that did they physically abuse you, so push, grab, slap, or throw something? If a parent or any other adult did that, if, you know, there was touching in the home, or if you felt that you weren't cherished by the adults around you, just things like that were really, really important to Chris Weston. I had a pretty high ACE score, but the thing is my resilience score was also very, very high. I had TWC as a safety net. I had a very, very loving mother who was consistently there, and later on, like, a very loving stepfather. I had school groups that I really, really enjoyed, teachers that I really, really enjoyed being around. And then I had passions in my life that I really wanted and tried to improve, which I feel helped me. Because I like to say that I could have been, like, a lot of the people who I see, and I tell, like, what I think of them is, like, people who've guarded these amazing qualities in their heart a little bit. And that could be due to trauma or just, like, not being fostered or a high ACE score. The difference, though, is that I had so many people who were there to support me, and I felt accountable to the community, and that really made a big difference. So talking about feeling accountable to the community, 4-H does an amazing job around creating a community around children. And this is important because it, like, strengthens their compassion and empathy for others, as well as it does imboost their sense of belonging and accountability. And 4-H actually does an amazing job of that. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, 4-H really is an amazing program. Because it's nationwide, there's a whole collection of universities, land-grant universities that go about creating curriculum, and one of the key focuses has to do with belonging and also mentoring. So we have, we have got junior leaders and team leaders who are able to pass along maybe what they have learned or, you know, mentor the younger ones.
nationwide, usually a person has the skill that they want to pass on. But with our junior leaders, we got the skills. We just guide them through it. Like sometimes I just give them cue cards as to what to say, you know, to teach the rest of the group something about science or to teach them about nutrition or cooking. And we did kids voting in the school. And those kids could just read from a cue card to tell the rest of the class. It is building leadership. It is building resilience. They can see how when you do something new, it's hard the first time, and then it gets easier as you go along.
That's like a life skill, really.
Right, it's a life skill, and it's so much fun. So I was telling you about one of our students who was a junior leader and could lead the class with things just with a cue card to start with. And this last school, during this school year, during our COVID mitigations, and we don't have any kids in the building, but we had a statewide art project, and one of our local kids demonstrated an art project that she picked out that was a pastel cupcake art, and then we planned out how she was going to teach it. We threw in a little bit of color wheel lesson so that she could teach that. She had made that cupcake with her cousin, and they gave it away afterwards. You know, it made the pictures and gave it to someone. So she challenged the kids participating to make their cupcake and then, you know, to give it out for kindness, generosity, thankfulness, gratitude, that kind of thing. All of those, sometimes it seems minor, maybe, to an adult who's working with kids, but it's huge in the life of a child that we want to just keep in mind that what we are doing impacts the people around us, but especially impacts the children around us. And if we can invest just a little into their life now, that is building up their resiliency factors. You had mentioned, you know, so many youth have the experience where they helped younger kids at 4-H, and later, years later, you know, they're still getting positive feedback. I remember you were there.
You helped us with this art project, yeah.
right, yeah, it was you. Boy, they can just make you feel famous. you know, and it's fun. It's just healthy. I think it's healthy to have a community that knows who you are, cares about what you're doing, and to realize we are passing that on to the younger kids. We're impacting our community. Even the kids are impacting their community. This is their community. They're not just our future. They are part of our community right now. So,
and I think that goes really well into, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Good.
But going into what I made this note about strengthening gratitude. And just like having this thing to show to the community and really seeing this, having this idea of, like, look what I can do. We sometimes forget about that. But it kind of shows how, like, gratitude is so important. And I'm going to actually bring this up because I did have a list of, like, ways that we can support, but I think this is a really good topic, is really having people, like, you talked about this youth that led the art project. Just, like, the many levels that it's getting at, one, it's just showcasing the thing, your talents, and showcasing things that you love, strengthening your relationships to your peers and the people around you. Really, that visibility does that itself. And really, just having to be able to present that and getting praise for it really strengthens one, really can strengthen one, the gratitude for the cousin that showed them how to do it. And it is time spent together, you know. And our gratitude or your gratitude for who was presenting it towards her, and I just think that that's really cool because I've been learning about how gratitude can really help your mental health, and If that's the case for adults, then I bet it's the same for children.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. It's definitely the same for children. I didn't know if that was where you were going with that, but...
No, but it is so healthy, right?
And it's just really cool because it's like nurturing the resilience factors that are already there. And I have here lists like faith, family, it could be activities, so it could be things like sports, it could be culture, and you guys do a lot of that, like working with the culture. You guys did Culture Week, working on really having their resilience factors strengthened as well, and I think that that's really cool.
Well, let's talk about all our time, huh?
I think we have like two more minutes, but then I do have to do the announcements. I'm just going to go a little bit, and sorry that we have to cut this part of the conversation off a little bit short, but just do a list of kind of the things that we as individuals and as community members could do to increase resilience and really be, I was going to say a green dot. I was just reading green dot. So, really be a good influence and role model, or just role modeling behaviors that we would like to see in children. And a lot of that is things like showing them healthy ways to set boundaries, to be able to protect themselves, nurturing their resilience factors, respecting their boundaries and holding them accountable for respecting yours, believing in their growth and praising their accomplishments. And I feel that a lot of these are things that many places in Bethel do really, really well. But as individuals, how we can support children in our community, respect and set boundaries and explain what you're doing and why you're doing things. One thing that we talked about a lot is that, you know, us as adults, and specifically me in this conversation, sometimes forget with, like, for all of my education that, you know, we have different brains than kids and things like that. And I think that's really, really important to remember. And communicating the effect of their decisions, that's talked a lot about in the Inuit Parenting article. Congratulating accomplishments, even seemingly small. The importance of being consistent and just celebrating the child. And I think that those are just things that I was going to talk about a little bit. We ran out of a little bit of time. But thank you so much, Sharon. I really enjoyed this talk, and I feel I've learned a lot, and I hope anybody listening has learned some things as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. If you want any more information on anything shown here or programming, our 24-hour crisis line is 907-543-3456. Our toll-free is 1-800-478-7799. And TWC's Bethel local business line is 907-543-3444. Or you can go to www.tundrapeace.org. Thank you for joining us today for Peace Talk. I hope you have a wonderful holiday and you have a happy new year.
Thank you for listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on KYUK.